We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, friends. This is Stack and Pennies presented by Mobile One. AJ Allmendinger dominates for a Roval dub. I had an eventful day, up, down, sideways, backwards, rebounded for a P17 finish. William Byron continues that momentum deep into the round of eight. We're going to break down all things, as well as Ben Kennedy. We're going to give you a couple snips of an interview that went an hour, breaking down the new schedule. He came right here in studio and told us all about it. So buckle up, friends. This is Stacking Pennies.
Stacking them deep, selling them cheap.
It tastes like gasoline, rubber, and victory.
We're just out here stacking pennies.
And here we go. Hello again. I'm Corey LaJoy, driver of the number 7 Cup Series Camaro. Joined by my two friends to my right, Danielle Trotta.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good.
That's good.
Yeah. Good week. Home game.
It was. Saw you out and about the racetrack.
A lot of family out
there. Shaking hands, kissing babies.
Mm-hmm. Babysitting fam a little bit.
Yeah.
You know how Charlotte is. You're kind of like, you love it, but it's a lot.
Well, yeah. I had all the Flores clans in my bus.
Oh, you did?
Just, yeah. I mean, crew was swinging off the Raptors in there, eating all the food.
Part of having a bus, bro.
That's part of it. And friends.
Yeah.
But same thing with you. Your mom was in town. Everybody's in town hanging out.
We went over there on Saturday. So, I mean, I think everybody kind of assumes that since we go to the racetrack every week, we kind of understand everything that's going on. But, like, I literally go Sunday morning from my house to the plane to truck to pit road, back to the truck to change to the plane and leave. So you never get to see anything in the concourse. So we went over there. My mom was camping across the street at like where the drag strip is.
Yeah.
We stayed at her motorhome. We didn't sleep there, but we hung out there. And then we kind of walked through all the things they had going on. Ferris wheel.
They blew
bouncy
it out this
houses.
Week.
The kids were super excited to see you on the side of
Chevy hauler.
Yeah, the Chevy hauler. Oh, there's Corey. Oh, there's Joey. Like, they were stoked. And yeah, it was a lot. And then kind of went through the...
What'd you think about that?
It was great.
Just the fan
then went
zone,
through
yeah.
the little gypsy tents and got an airbrushed t-shirt, some die-cast cars. It was a... Yeah, it was a good time. That was... It's fun to go see that. And, like, it made me more excited about the race.
Did it?
Because I'm like, damn, I don't get to see this every week. There's a lot of excitement outside of here. Like, all these people are here to see you drive and us compete. And it's, you know, it's really cool to kind of just... It's refreshing to see it from the other side. And then, like, after the race, we went out the tunnel and back to my mom's motorhome and ate dinner there and hung out. And just to see the traffic and, like, the effort that the fans put and the stuff they go, you know, put up with to be at the event, it's pretty awesome. And it made me feel pretty lucky to do it.
Doesn't it give you a little more appreciation for people that, like, spend the money, go camp, take a couple days off work, and literally just go watch us drive in circles?
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and it gives me an appreciation for, like, the show that we're putting on. The people want to come see it, and then, like, they're having a blast. So everybody wins.
I like seeing it through, because my family hadn't really been before, so to see it through somebody's eyes that's never seen it, when you do this every single week, and they were like, you have the coolest job in the world.
It's like, easy to lose perspective.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I like going to see... I like going to be a spectator at some short track races, 4 or 5 a year, whether it's New Smyrna more down there for speed weeks, or go to a late model race on a Saturday night at Hickory or something like that, just to remind yourself, like, oh, like, this is why you do it, right? Granted, the paycheck's nice, and it's like, it legitimately is the coolest job that you could ever dream of.
Yeah.
To be a driver in the Cup Series. So
how'd you feel? How was your day?
Well, I wanted to talk about the biggest event of the week, and it wasn't the Bank of America 400. It was the Kickball Classic.
I'm trying to forget it.
Downtown. Come on.
As much as I love the Kickball Classic, devastating for the Bill Ballers.
It was tough. So it was the first L we have taken in the competitive bracket with our Bill Ballers team. Won the first 2 years in a row. We were looking for an unprecedented three-peat. It's never been done before, Danielle. And David Hoffman Realty put a squad together of some soccer guys, and we made some errors in the field. We didn't execute. We need to execute. We took the L. Didn't put us in position to play the semifinals or to progress to the championship. So it was the Kingdom Keepers against Clean Juicers, and they took the dub and the Dale. So that was heartbreaking. Luckily for me,
of us feel that lose every year.
I didn't know what mortals feel like when it came to kickball. So Ryan and I both were devastated. Today was the first day since Thursday that there had been any text sent in the team chat. That's how somber it was. Wow. Nobody wanted to talk to each other.
Woke up and wept every day.
Dude, it was brutal. But that aside, competition aside, the place seemed, for me, super packed. I think we sold 1,300 tickets, probably gave out another 300 tickets, give or take. So there was probably 1,700 people there. And we're still collecting auction items and donations. But I think we got close to $250,000 raised for the YMCA and Samaritan's Feet. Soft clap for the kiddos. Man, that event's became so fun. Just the support of everybody, whether they're playing in celebrity tournaments or playing in the Kickball Classic tournament, whether they're producing it on NASCAR Productions, commentating it. How was the commentate? That was your first color commentating gig.
No, I've done Bowman Gray and a couple other things.
Your first real color commentating gig of an actual
event.
It was good.
Chuck and Merriman were there. We had a lot of fun up there. It was nice to be able to make fun of people with a microphone on instead of just doing it organically with nobody hearing it.
I went back and listened to some of it, and you didn't make fun of me. You actually were like very complimentary.
You're my co-host here.
Mediocre skills, and I was like, thanks, Ryan. That was very sweet.
Hey, I'm not going to listen.
And I thought y'all did
on the same team.
ESPN's going to call you, dude, so I hope Penske has you locked up because you have mad skills. I was very impressed with you. And
I got tires to change.
Maybe for ESPN 8, the Ocho, for, competitive ultimate frisbee.
I got tires to change. They're going to have to wait.
We got championship to try to win.
Speaking of the Ocho, we're in the round 8 and we're going for it.
You are in the round of Ocho right now. Get it. Now, these guys, all 8 of them are capable of hoisting that Bill France trophy and Phoenix, how you like your chances going into Las Vegas? I feel like Penske's always solid there.
I like ours. It's a lot like Charlotte. We won Charlotte, but it's just moving and shaking so much throughout the year. I feel like the way that the year cycled, like it might cycle right into our favorite where we hit on something at the end of the season. As far as the car, it's two different things. So as far as the car performance, we showed at Texas our car wasn't the fastest, but with a solidly executed day, other than speeding on pit road, we were able to keep them up front. So it's just controlling things we can control on pit road, and I know that Ryan is really hungry after this round last year. He's ready to rip.
All right, I don't want to get too far into Vegas because we'll recap that in a bit. Let's just recap the Roval. I had a fairly exciting day, and it started right from the beginning. Let's not roll the tape just yet. Let me give you a little context. Kevin Harvick, there are three or four guys that I look at in the sport that have hung the moon. Jimmy Johnson's one. David Pearson's another one. Dale Enman, for me, is one of those guys that are just stoic. For me, Kevin Harvick's on that list. Quick Kevin Harvick story. I believe it was 2010. I was trying to build. Dad finds some old drop-snout Penske car in some f***ing rental warehouse somewhere, right? So
we named it Rusty.
We actually named it Rusty
because it was blue when it came back.
It used to be
shop.
One of Rusty's cars, and it was Rusty.
You used to have to name every car.
Oh,
it was bad
gosh.
Luck. Have you named your off kilter? Have you named your Cup cars yet?
No, that's you, probably that, why
you're going to be like Forrest Gump. Can't catch a damn fish. You're going to name your car, and you're just going to be shrimping.
That's probably what's going to do.
You got to start naming them.
I do. Thanks for the reminder. I digress to the story. We got Rusty. We're working on it. And everything, it was probably a 2006 car, give or take, for conversation purposes. Everything is special built. Center links and pitman arms and spindles and truck arms. And the house. Like everything is Penske specific because that's just how they did it back in the day. So another sub-story to this. Dad, Delana Harvick, was my dad's PR girl back at Finch's back in 2002. So in that time frame, she met Harvick. They all, hung out and knew each other from the time I was 8 years old, 9 years old. Fast forward. apparently, well, I don't know any conversations happen behind the scenes, but I'm struggling trying to get this car together. We're trying to go to Iowa with him. I get a call. I'm working late one night. Get a call. Dad on the PA system shop. Corey, line one. So I pick up the phone. Hey, Tarv, I'm hearing you're having some hard time building this car. I'm like, yeah. Can't find parts. Don't have the knowledge to put it together, right? Well, just load that thing up and bring it up to KHI. He still had KHI going, right? Championship winning truck teams, Xfinity teams. The personnel he had up there was second to none. So I loaded up 3-tier card of all the stuff I had, drug it up there, and literally dropped it off. He put two guys on it. They built that thing, made spindles, made a centerlink for it, set this thing up. We ended up running like third at Iowa.
Wow.
So that's – and didn't ask for anything, right? That's just – that's he did it because he had the people, he had the stuff, and he wanted to help us out. So that's what Harvick's done amongst some other stories to help my career progress to where it has.
That's awesome.
And there is also a saying, what does it work until your heroes become your rivals? And that's where we are right now.
Uh-oh. So, what happened?
So there was an instance at Darlington. He was having a good day. I was not. I was 18th. Come off turn four. And you know how like the guy on the bottom kind of sliding up, try to time it for the guy on the top to just blend and then so you can keep your momentum. Harvick's running the top. I give him the top. And I just misjudged it, like nicked his bumper. He does one of these and like gives me a hand out the window like, yo, you're a f***ing lap down. Stop driving to the guy running fourth. So.
Were you mad at yourself?
Yeah, because there's several guys I don't mind running to. He's just not on that list, right? So then Bristol, fast forward, he's having a really bad day. What'd he say? That was the worst day he's ever had with fenders on it. You know, something to that effect. So that car wasn't driving good. It was later on in the day. He had been running the bottom. He runs and moves up to the middle, getting to turn one. He checks up a little bit earlier than I expected. I give him like a pretty square shot, like, oh, pow, slides. He hits the fence. I'm like, oh, like, sorry for stuffing you in the fence. He keeps going, texting him, hey, man, sorry to hit you. He goes, well, it's becoming a trend type of thing, right? Like,
you're a habitual runner into her.
I'm a habitual bumper line stepper. So I say, hey, forever a fan. I will leave your bumper alone for the last couple weeks of the year.
That too was a lie.
Wrong. I start right behind him at the Roval. He's 22nd. I'm 24th. We get going. Now we can roll the tape.
Oh, we got an onboard.
Here we go, onboard. This is like the first or second lap of the race. All the apexes of every corner right now were deep in traffic. He throws a little bit of block. I'm off of his bumper. The 43 behind me is like wearing me out. Pow, 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 pow. Little bit of shot right here. We're spinning our tires. There's a log jam through eight. And I'm checked up. The 43 hits me here. And then the four checks up.
Ooh.
And I hit him right there. No harm, no foul. But the whole time he's got his hand out his window like this. Like, what the f***? We talked about this. And I'm like, oh,
that's not like a wreckable offense.
But I think it might have been
because
it third strike.
Over.
It might have been like a third strike mother type of thing. Even though the message was obviously not relayed that my head was snapped back from the 43 hitting me simultaneously while he got checked up out of the front. Fast forward to like 20 to go. We're not very high up and we're probably 18th, 19th. And now the positions have since changed.
Oh, now
he's behind me, and he's like, okay, here it is. He's been running to me for the last 6-7 weeks. I only have to race against him for four more. Let's show this boy a lesson. Gasses it up a little bit. And that was it. So he turns me around, sends me a little message, takes the three out with him. So that was my calamity of the week. Luckily for us, we get a yellow a couple laps later. Luckily for us, there was an opportunity to put tires on, and we were at a tire advantage for some of the guys who were trying to maintain track position. So I had plenty of time. I had like 15 laps to think about what I'm going to do when I'm getting there. Mind you, KHI already bought a team in the Kickball Classic. They've supported it the last couple of years. Appreciate that. Shout out Josh Jones. I already fired a check over. I'm playing his golf tournament on Monday. Surely I can't wreck this old guy for spinning me out if I'm going to go see him tomorrow. I'm teeing it up next to him. In 24 hours. So I said, you know what? I feel like the best thing I could do is just pass him and give him the deuce. Because that's also a little bit of like a, you know, when somebody like
worse.
You, it's worse. You know, like when you run into somebody or you're you're racing somebody hard, you put them in the door, you make them check up, and they're behind you in your arrow blocking them, and then they finally get you, and they don't give you like a middle finger, they just give you like a, hey man, thanks for playing. That's what
that checks your ass even, yeah, for sure.
So there was a couple instances after this that I could have put him in a bad spot, middle three or something like that, and I didn't want to touch him, right? Because one, he's my mentor and I respect him, and he's a champion and all this stuff. So I'm like, you know what? I'm on a little bit tire advantage. I'm gonna pass him, and I'm just gonna hold the deuces out as long as I possibly can. So I got him through. I turned underneath of him in eight and across the big track all the way through the braking zone, just two fingers out the window. Thanks for spinning me out. And there it is. I've raced long enough in my career to have a little bit of a grudge with Kevin Harvick. And then we saw each other on Monday and like
at his golf tournament.
At his golf tournament.
What'd he say? Anything?
No, like I didn't even bring it up. Obviously, he's taking pictures and all that. I'm sure we'll talk about it. But there's probably a little bit of like, told you, stop running in the back of me.
Had to send you a message.
Yeah.
And none of this made TV, by the way. Like, I had no idea that you were causing stuff with Kevin. I had no idea.
I wasn't. You saw the incident. It was a little bit of a initiated bump from my rear bumper through my front bumper into him.
He
flat out turned me.
He looked at your quarter panel and said, slingshot, engage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That part was on TV.
Why?
That part I saw.
Why the hell you keep spinning Josh Blicky out, man?
Dude. What were
you're
you doing?
You're a habitual Blicky spinner.
I spun him out at Indy too. I legitimately thought he was giving me the corner at Indy, but he chopped me. This one was just because I was an asshole. We came out of the pits nose to tail, and he left an entire lane open on the bottom. And I was like, why? Where are you? Okay, I'll take this lane if you're going to give it to me. And then he turns to try to make the corner like a normal person. I locked the right front tire up because they were cold because we just had come out of pit road. And I turned him around.
Were you too far?
You didn't just turn him around. You drove him all the way into the barrier.
At that point, you're stuck. You can't slow down because your left front's locked up, your right front's locked up, and you're just driving.
Okay, so people that you were sending a message, like you were not going to let off of them.
No, I was trying to stop it.
Okay.
Yeah. Once you start sliding and another car hits you, like you're just
speed. Okay. It speeds you up. Okay. Yeah, like I was trying to get a wood up. Right front tire was locked up. We were just both crashing at that point in time.
You know what he said after?
Something about half-ass apology.
Yeah.
Hey, he said it about.
What'd you say?
I mean, it's probably half-ass apology. What are you going to say? I said sorry. What else am I going to do? Keep it moving.
Oh, you accepted blame for it.
Yeah.
Like from the view I saw, it was like you were kind of there, and then he kind of shaded down.
He left. It wasn't like I drove through the rear. Like thought that I was. He left the lane open. I'm like, is he giving?
Felt like you were
me?
At his left rear tire.
Yeah, which bad spotter position. They can't really see. I was surprised that he left an entire car with the open. I thought he missed the corner, which is why. And then once he gets on your left front tire, then you can't stop it or slow down. I don't know. I mean, I vouched for him to get in that 77 car last year, so you know, there's. I felt like. I vouched for his abilities, and he had a shot at it. And
so it said that
we just coincidentally had some run-ins the last couple of weeks.
He's expecting a half-ass apology, or you?
No,
gave
no,
him
no,
one?
No. He said he gave.
He
him
said
one.
I gave him a half-ass apology for Indy. What's he? Oh. Yeah, what's he? What,
are you gonna
fruit basket to his front door? We're racing.
Yeah, man.
So sorry about your bad luck. It's a Cup Series. I've got spun out by plenty of people. Now I digress. We covered Corey's calamity of the week. We rebound. We put tires on. We make some moves. Finished 17th at the end, which was, I feel like, a solid day for our team.
Hopefully this week, this pace. Coming week, it's just Corey's back to Corey's close call.
That would be Corey's close call of the week, sponsored by, I don't know, we need something with a C.
Well, this week it was definitely
Celsius.
Sponsored by Mobile One.
Ooh, sponsored by Celsius. Celsius is Corey's close call of the week. Speaking of Celsius, selfishly, I wanted to get Celsius in victory lane for the first time, but AJ Allmendinger, arguably the king of the Roval, if you will,
he carried
Celsius to victory lane for their first brand Cup Series victory.
It's big.
AJ Allmendinger, a new father, same old good road course ringer.
Had Chris Rice smiling at everybody.
He was smiling at everybody.
Smiled
at
somebody today. And Beaver. Shout out to your little brother.
Shout out, Casey. I try to make it a game like Where's Waldo throughout the course of the day to find out where Casey's shooting on the side of the racetrack.
He's
around. He's like Carmen Sandiego out there.
Your brother does content
yeah.
for Kyle Grayson.
Yep.
So yeah, that's a big
one. And last week's dog of the week, Victory oh, yeah. Lane dog.
Yeah, dude, good for them guys.
Goes from big taking week. His truck out with his bare ass to willing one home.
Good for them.
Does that qualify like as a dog of the week, Deuce?
Double dog
of the week?
Going to have to wait and find out.
Got to wait to the Boat and Woes to find out who that dog is. It's starting to catch a little traction, too.
It really is.
Seeing some captions.
People are talking.
People are talking. Barking, if you will.
Yeah.
You want to be a dog? Allmendinger, though, it was weird to see his reaction to Victory Henry. And it just shows like what Sundays are. It was very emotional. But also, his future is uncertain there. Right, because Kolig needs funding, and he doesn't necessarily come with it. So
get it. I don't get it. Why he would want to go race on Saturdays when it's only three races more.
Well, we talk about it at length here. It's three races more, but the stress and the workload is triple.
That's true.
Right?
He said on Saturday, though, he was asked at Charlotte, if you had the choice, he said he'd choose Sunday. I just don't think they have the money to fund him, to sponsor that car, and to pay him to run Cup. Mm. I just think Kolig is in a financial predicament that a lot of teams find themselves in.
Yeah.
Which is our hopes and dreams and our wishes don't align with our checkbook. And it's an expensive business. And if they don't find more sponsorship, you know, I'm sure AJ has a price. And that price isn't cheap. And
not when he can get you a dub.
But I understand the fans. Dub. I understand what you're saying, Ryan. And I think a lot of the fans on Sirius have said the same thing. Like, he's winning you Cup races.
Doesn't
find
matter.
A freaking way it's, to put him in the car.
On the teardown, they were talking about that. And they're like, it just sucks that, like, if the business model has to be, you know, buying rides. Well, it's been that way since forever.
Yeah.
Right? Like, people have come and bought rides from since the 80s and on.
Yeah.
And now it's even more pertinent, I think, than it's ever been. I mean, if you look at Xfinity and Truck, is there anybody in Xfinity and Trucks that's not really paying for their own stuff or having it funded? Like, that's the game. You don't go and hone your skills at a local short track anymore. You go to marketing school and figure out how to sell your sponsor, and you go learn in the Truck Series. That's kind of where it is. So
what do you want to see AJ do?
He's a Sunday guy.
He's
a Sunday guy. He is an elite road course racer and a very good oval racer. He's a playoff guy. I think that the level of professionalism and knowledge and experience that guy has is priceless. But I do think and agree with you. I don't think it's up to him. I think that there's probably one comma difference between racing on Sunday and racing on Saturday as well when it comes to AJ's pay. And it's probably at least a digit difference between funding a Cup car and funding an Xfinity car. So, unfortunately, it's got to make sense with a C for Kyle Grayson, but I'm sure that when you win, winning fixes everything, right? So, if they're on the fence still trying to push their marketing team to go sell AJ for a Cup deal, you can generally squeeze out a couple more bucks out of your partners for a couple more races to maybe make the ends meet.
With how expensive the cars are now, I think Denny Hamlin touched on it.
Is that
350,000? Is that what
you're saying? Yeah, with that engine.
So,
wait, how much without an engine?
I'm guessing 350.
Really?
Yeah, that's what Danny said. Okay. He said 350. Is it not, if you put somebody in there that's just funded, right? At what point does a veteran make you money on the back end of not wrecking your stuff?
Well, you're talking at least five spots in points and chunking three or four cars, right? Then you're looking at $1 million plus worth of damage, and you're probably looking at another $500,000 in purse money. So I'm sure they factor all those variables in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
But let's just roll that out. Let's play that out for a second. If there is a kid coming up that's wanting to get paid a couple hundred grand and bringing you $5 million, that is a big swing between somebody bringing no millions and wanting to make millions. That's a big financial swing. So
yeah.
Unfortunately, it's to that, especially when you have a guy that's a guy you can plug in right now and win your race on a road course.
Now, what does it do for your charter when you win a race?
I don't know.
Is that all based off points, or is that?
That's way above my
because
pay.
That because like
you have to listen I think to the other podcast to listen for that.
I think there's a tier in the charter system though, and it is based on performance. And so the top performing charter teams get a larger piece of the pie than the bottom. So I'm sure that this probably does something to elevate that for them. But
unfortunately for him, the win obviously comes outside of the playoffs, so it doesn't really make a substantial jump for him, right? Because the worst that Ricky Stenhouse can finish in points is 16th.
Yeah.
And that carries over 3 years. I looked at the points, winning for AJ doesn't even get him a spot in points because he's still behind the 99 points. So unfortunately, if there was a bad time to win, if you're not in the, it's not in the playoffs, if you are not a playoff team, because it just doesn't carry the financial implications as it does winning the regular season, getting to the playoffs and giving yourself that 3 year runway of 16th or better in points.
Well, maybe this win will change the narrative and some sponsor will want to step up and say, what do you need to get the rest of the way? And
potentially. Like to see it happen.
Yeah.
I think we all would. He earned it this weekend. Speaking of, 60, man, the Ocho.
I was hoping the 8 car was going to win in advance.
I even thought about that. Remember we talked about that on Spare Change? Yeah. And I saw that 8. I was like, I looked the way up there. I'm like, oh, of course Kyle's on the front row. He's going to mess around and win this thing.
He tried on that restart. You could see
spun
like.
Spun the tires.
And you've, like, if you've raced the summer shootout, you've kind of been at that part of the track where you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. And you get into the fence. And just seeing him like bury the gas to try to fill the gap in the one, but not getting there, you could tell that his race was kind of over. Then the 24 got by him, and I was like, Byron and Rudy are going to steal another one after, you know, their average finish. They had a first and 2 seconds.
So here's my question, because I agree with you. I think Kyle probably gave that car everything it had and then some, maximized its potential and got the best result he possibly could. But I guess my question, I know we still have 4 races to go, but how do you look at, is this a success if you're Richard Childress in Kyle's first year? Because he won the same number of races that Reddick did. They each got 3. Tyler got booted in the round of 16. Kyle got booted in the round of 12. So he only made it 1 round further. And he probably has to get paid a lot more money. So
it's a success.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. I'm sure Kyle Busch on this Tuesday for his comp meeting is probably not considered a success, right? But look at. I mean, RCR as a whole is still in like a rebuilding phase. I mean, you got to let that guy get in there, and they have to get the team and the overall processes of the simulator and how it translates to reality, all that stuff refined around Kyle Busch. That guy's a 3-time champion.
2.
I mean, he's going to get those guys progressively better. Randall Burnett's a stud. Those guys are deep, and I think it's an improvement from what Tyler did last year. I think the difference in probably the ability to sell Kyle Busch as a champion and going deeper, there's a little bit of back-end purse there that's probably a little bit better, but those guys are bumping their per-race sponsorship price up because you got a guy like Kyle. So I don't think the financial implications would make it less of a success, personally speaking. But I guess.
I think if you don't win the championship with that guy, it's not a success. And I don't. It's finite. Your time with the sport's finite, right? There was a point in time 2 years ago where the 4-car won 10 races or whatever it was, right? And now
I agree. I feel like they should have done more.
And
it's kind of a wash. It's Kyle Busch.
But on the other side of that, it's fucking hard.
No,
like,
I know.
You know, like,
I know.
There's better cars than him that are out. And hell, the 19's even out of our regular season champion is out of the owner's points deal. So it's
fun fact, the 7 car scored more points in the playoffs than the 19 car has.
19's come on. Nineteens had a rough go. But
I think we've only scored like the 18th most amount of points.
But yeah, if you talk to Randall Burnett, Andrew Dickinson, they put the 3-car pit crew on there as one of the best pit crews on pit road. Like they went full kill mode.
Yeah.
And they, you know, that's a championship caliber team. And I think that there's 10 or 15 championship caliber teams that the only goal at the beginning of the year is how do we win the championship? Make a deep playoff run, win the championship. So I'd say if you're in RCR meeting, it's not a success.
Oh, I don't think they're over there popping champagne bottles, slapping everybody on the ass like, good game, guys.
No.
You know? But I think being realistic, I think that the 8 team relative to the field was stronger last year. I'm not saying Tyler did a better job in that car. I feel like the 8 came out of the gates hot.
Depending on the week.
And
Same this year, though, right?
Same this year, but there was probably 5 or 6, 7 races last year that they had cut a tire down or whatever. I do think that Randall had a little bit of a head start with that car because they ran the test team, so they understood what that car could do, what aero platform needed to be. and it took some teams a little bit of time to catch up. So now those gains and losses are a little bit more tangible. So I would venture to say the 8 team was stronger relative to the field last year, a little bit more equal to the field, a little more parity, and Kyle Busch had a little bit more success in the 8 than the 8 driver did last year. That's what I'm
Well, thinking. What adds insult to injury, I think, too, is that you're looking over at Tyler Reddick, who did advance to the round of 8, is one of the fastest cars week in and week out, is sitting on poles, winning stages, and in my opinion, needs to be a part of the Championship 4 conversation now. Like, his stock through these playoffs just continues to rise. The driver that you had in that seat last year, maybe the hottest right now, aside from maybe Denny and Byron. Like, Tyler Reddick, this round shapes up good for him. That, to me, that adds insult to injury. That makes it sting a little bit more. The guy you lost could easily, I think, get to Phoenix.
There's a reason they went and got him, right? And that's why he went from paying for his ride to being paid to drive cars. Because they saw that he's one of the best and
one of them dudes.
I don't think it's not a surprise to me, or is it a surprise to you that he's in the round of 8 and could win a championship?
No.
Like if they said at the beginning of the year Tyler Reddick's gonna be a championship favorite in the year, I'd be like, yeah,
I could see that.
See that for sure, because they have a pretty open notebook with Gibbs, it seems like. And dude, Tyler Reddick is I've said it again. As far as raw talent, he's right there with Kyle Larson. He just doesn't race as much, so.
Speaking of Kyle Larson, my man stuffed one in the fence in practice. Those boys worked all night tirelessly till, what did Cliff say, about 3 o'clock in the morning? And they ended up a P13 on the day. Probably not what those boys drew up, but it was enough to get their ticket punched to the round of 8. Anytime you bring Kyle Larson to Homestead, I'm telling you, just go ahead. Like, it's unbelievable. It's like lamb and tuna fish.
Did he win the race last year there?
Yes, by like a country mile.
Dude, I'd like to see what the 45 is going to do next to him this year.
He can't run the fence like Kyle Larson. He might be able to think about running it almost as good.
You had an interesting take this week, though. You said yesterday on the golf course that you feel like if you get too close to the fence, it hurts the diffuser.
Under braking.
Okay, just at road courses.
Yeah.
Okay.
It does free the car up.
Really?
Yeah, if you look at CFD models and all that, the closer you get to the wall, it takes away air because the air comes in through the sides and under the in between the rear wheels, so whenever you run up against the wall, it frees the balance up quite a bit.
Okay,
so you can run your car tighter, but if you get closer, it actually frees it up aerodynamically.
We talked to Tyler Monday. He's like, I know everyone thinks I'm so good at Homestead. He's like, I'm more excited for Vegas. He really feels like he's gonna go out and win Sunday.
There's 8 other guys too. 7 other guys feel like they're going to go out and win too, because that's the thing about them 8 dudes. They know any given time their team is capable of getting that dub.
A lot of them say you have to win in this round. I mean, you know what's crazy is Denny in this round a year ago in the 3 races went 5th, 7th, 5th and missed the championship 4.
Playoff points.
Because of the Hail Melon.
And stage points.
Will never happen again, but it happened.
Yeah, playoff points and stage points. It's huge. You know, that's why the races are set up that way. So Vegas is going to, you know, start that. But I think, you know, you look back at Chastain, that sucks that they're out, but they just haven't been as strong all year. Keselowski, I mean, they were hot for a little bit, but he's just kind of lackluster on road courses the last couple of years. And then Bubba, valiant effort. Way better road course program driving wise that he's brought to the track.
You rise to the level of your competition, right? When you're sitting there in the simulator and you can go look at what your teammates, who's probably the best at road courses right now, Tyler, and if you can just go look at what he's doing, okay, this is where he commits his hand, this is his braking application and how he trails off and how much trail brake he uses, like that stuff is like the best driving coach you could get is just by watching somebody that's better than you try to keep up or try to get better and apply those things yourself. So we've seen just the influx of Tyler Reddick make an influence on Bubba Wallace's road course prowess. Because Bubba Wallace, remember when we went to the Robo first time and wrecked every time he was on the racetrack? It was like, okay, caution's out for the 43. You'd come in the pits. You'd take your helmet off, look at the scoreboard. Green gets going. Yellow's back out. For what for? The 43s and the tires again.
Yeah.
That's how Bubba was on road courses. Now my man's qualifying in the top 5, has some pace. So, yes, you can develop your skills, especially if you know and you have a good barometer to measure yourself up against. And T. Reddick is that guy.
A lot to be proud of. I think he tried to do everything right. I mean, he qualified up front. He got stage points.
And has MJ been to every playoff race this year?
Come on.
Jesus.
He's in.
He is bought in.
I think he was on Reddick's box, though, this week, which was interesting.
He's probably watched Bubba Road Courses before. Not going up there.
I'm going to stay on Tyler's box.
Reminds me of like the Hornets.
Like front row seat.
Yep.
Too much pressure on them guys. But he's psyched, though. He said, like someone said, MJ was like, yeah, we still got one in. So, you know, I know Bubba's his boy, but I'm interested to see if he shows up at Vegas, Homestead, Martinsville, as long as Tyler's still in it. I'm interested to see if MJ keeps coming races.
I hope he does.
He's got he's got as many cars in playoffs as Roger Penske and Jack Roush.
Largest crowd around my dad, because I told you guys when Kurt was here, like, he was our hero. Wasn't Richard Petty, no offense. We weren't a NASCAR family. My dad, we get to the track. He's like, you think MJ's on the 23 box? I'm like,
did you go find him?
Go find out.
Did you go see him?
I think he did. Yeah.
His airness. Did he shake his hand? It's so fluffy, soft.
MJ's hand is fluffy?
Yeah. It's like a mitt.
You ain't going to have fluffy hands on pit road.
No.
There's work to be done down there.
You got some paws down there.
We should go talk about it.
We should. Pit Road Boats and Woes right after this.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Do your pennies stretch as far as they used to? Most likely it doesn't. Here's why. It took 200 years for the U.S. to print its first $5 trillion. Today, Washington has done that in just 3 years. The problem, every new dollar makes each one of your dollars worth less, robbing you and every other hardworking American. But you can stop this cycle of robbery by diversifying your IRA or 401k into gold, an asset that has stood the test of time. Our new sponsor, Birch Gold Group, has helped tens of thousands of Americans protect their retirement savings with physical precious metals. Now you can too. Get a free info kit on gold right now by texting the word Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, to 989-898. With an A-plus rating with the BBB, you're in good hands with Birch Gold. So get your free info kit by texting Corey to the number 989-898. Go check them out. Put some pennies in some gold. Welcome back. This is Stacking Pennies presented by Mobile One, and you know what time it is. It is time for Pit Row Boats and Woes.
Ooh.
What was the woe of the week?
Oh, man, there was a couple. I think 99 had one where they dropped the jack, had to re-jack it on the right side. There was a couple cars that did that. I think 99's was like blatantly on TV. It's easy to do.
What they do?
They dropped the jack on the right side, and the jackman left, thought the right rear was tightened, but it wasn't. They had to wave him down. He had to run back around. And then the one car, man, pit road was crowded. You were close to getting clipped and clipping somebody on the way in. Mm-hmm. And then the one car came in, and he got in his box like almost parallel to the wall. They ran out. There was a green flag stop, and the rear changer, Pazenga, he wasn't sure if it was legal or not. That's how close the left rear was to the line. They ended up pitting it anyway and got him out of there. But, yeah, it was a swarm down there when everybody would, like, pit on the same lap.
Yeah.
A woe for us was, like, we stayed out. We were leading, and it was going to work out great where we had clean track and we're going to gain some track position. We were kind of just gaining track position all day off of strategy. And Denny spun out, and we were not close enough to pit.
Which time?
In the one that brought the caution out. I guess it was, like, right there in the chicane coming to the start-finish line.
I thought he spun out twice there.
The second one brought the caution out.
Oh.
With Rockenfeller?
Yes. Yeah.
That was the
last
time.
He spun out off of that corner.
That was a low link.
Yes. That was it. So, that was bad. I wanted to, man, it was a tough debate for Dog of the Week this week.
What are your credentials? Because sometimes it's obvious and sometimes it's not so much.
You have to be a dog and the best dog of that week.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then that makes you the dog of the week.
Hell yeah.
And it was tough because I really, like, how pit crews work is they have like Trackhouse, right? Trackhouse does the 16s pit crew, which the dog of the week from last week, Charlie Plank, shout out to him. Great shirt, great beard, hero in a half shell.
Dog.
Not of the week, but of last week. Very close to being the dog of this week as well.
I don't think we've had two dogs in a row.
An unprecedented Cup double win- dog, if
Cup
you would.
Winner dog.
Yeah, so they won the race. And what's really cool about that is the way pit departments are set up, they train at Trackhouse. So then you have your two house cars at Trackhouse, right? Which if you're in an athletic department at a, you know, if you're on a pit crew in an athletic department at a big team, you want to be on a house car. But then they also have satellite cars. We have them with the 21.
For depth.
They the colleague doesn't have its own pit department, right? So they go and they contract guys from Trackhouse. So they don't have to incur the expense of having a pit department and coaches and weight rooms and training staff and PTs, right? Trackhouse does all that. It's a set fee. And then why that works for Trackhouse is it gives them depth, and they also charge, you know, colleague for that. Same thing with Gibbs does it for
2311.
They don't. Well, 2311 trains at Gibbs, but they have their own guys. Yeah. But they do it for Legacy Motor Club.
Motor Club.
They do it for the 38 and 34 front row. Hendrick does it for you guys. We do it for the 21. So it's kind of a thing that is very common, but what's not common is that the satellite cars win a race. So it's always really like uplifting when you see, when you're on one of those cars, you see the guys on the house car kind of always having success, right? Like they see the one car guys, 99 car guys win a lot of races. So it's always good to see your guys that are on, you know, the satellite cars win. So big ups to them. They kept them in the race. Is that Squid that crew chiefs that thing?
Yep.
So that was awesome. But more important than that is when you go there on the fringe and you have to make it, like the six car was, they were right there, 2 points out. They crushed the day. A couple eights, a couple low nines, puts them P1 on the day. And when you are fighting your way in the playoffs, even if things don't go your way on the track, you control what you control, and those guys were the dogs of the week. The one guy, the literal, he's a dog every week. Coot dog. Steve Price, rear changer. Coot dog. Lynchburg, Virginia's finest.
Yeah, yes.
He's still in my phone as Steve Weiser. Steve Weiser Price. So the six car, Brad, when he took over Roush, he went and got a bunch of really good guys. Steve Price was at Trackhouse or Ganassi at the time. Dog. Then two guys from Hendrix, Johnny Roberts from Changer.
Dog.
And Dustin Lineback.
Dusty Dog.
What a damn last name. Imagine playing college football and the linebacker's name's Lineback.
Oh, jeez. No. Oh, fuck with that guy.
Telvin McClurkin is your tire carrier, and Big Brad Robinson, New York's own, is your fueler.
Fuel dog.
If you see the memes on Roush's Instagram of the big-ass dude holding the gas can, that's Big Brad.
Big dog.
So those guys have been a great pick all year. They put, and like I said, it's a, you know, the fire's up, right? It's hot in the kitchen.
Mm.
Come playoff time when you're right there on the cutoff line, and those guys delivered. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't work out for them on the track, but on pit road, that was a hell of a day for them. So
they did enough to get them dogs of the week.
That makes you the dogs of the week.
Mm. Golf clap for the dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, good for them. And dude, this round is serious on pit road. We talk about the heat in the kitchen. Well, it's on fire right now.
An inferno.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got
Vegas, you know, Homestead, Martinsville.
That's it. You can do, I mean, you're going to do, you could do seven stops this week. You could do 10 stops in Homestead. If every time the caution comes out, you're going to be pitting there. And then Martinsville, you know, it's just going to be a dogfight. I think Martinsville, last year we were pitted right there by the 20 car. The 20 car was leading. We were running second. And it felt like a pit competition. We were like three stalls down. It was all open in between us. And we'd each get done and kind of look at each other. And we were all just dropping low nines all day. And it was like, it was a really fun day. Even though we didn't advance, it was really fun to race with those guys. And
so the time to just block and tackle and making fairway pit stops is over?
It's down in distance, right? I've been on the car here in Vegas, right, where you have an issue. The first stop, green flag stop of the day. And it runs green for so long, you never get it back. Because if you have an issue and you go a lap down,
then you go two.
The stage brakes don't really work out for you, and the field catches the back of the field and they start lapping a bunch of guys, you can just be stuck a lap down all day. Mm-hmm. So Vegas, you have to, green flag stops, you have to execute. You have to get it right. You have to get it tight, and you have to get them back out there without having to come down pit road. But come the end of the race, you're going to have to rifle one off. And, you know, two tires, four tires is going to be a strategy there at the end. We've seen that, you know, here earlier this year, Vegas, a lot of mile and a halves. Then we go to Homestead, and you're just going to be bolting four tires on that thing all day. And then, like I said, Martinsville, you know, it's just one of them places for tight pit boxes, tight pit road. And you're definitely, you know, you might not win the race or win the championship, but you're sure as hell somebody's going to lose it on pit road for sure.
Always do.
The Hendrick cars are still, I think, you know, even though the six car, I think the six car led the week, but the four Hendrick cars were second, third, fourth, and fifth. So, you know, they still have a ton of speed. Your team cranked off an awesome stop. They're the only ones that kind of have depth all the way through, and even through their, you know, affiliate cars like yours, they're very fast.
Yeah, my guys are good.
So it's going to be interesting to see if that speed on pit road and their speed in the cars can translate to a ring on their finger. But
it takes everything.
Going back to the dogs, though, a question. If you see how good some of the guys on the six are, they do not advance. The 17 does advance. Do teams look at that internally before the next round?
17's been some dogs this week or this year. They've been the dogs of the week a couple times, and
they got their own dogs.
They're a young bunch. Good. They've won four races this year because they won three with the 17, and they won Daytona 500 at Ricky. They got moved from the 47 to the 17. Another classic case of talking about outsourcing pit crews, right? They took that whole team from Ricky's team, put them on the 17, and they won three races, and they won at three tracks, you know, where you – Richmond's one of them where you just have to have a great day on pit road. So they're a really young team, but a really talented team. So it'd be hard. I thought about that too, kind of looking at the ones that got knocked out and their depth and who could get switched over. But that 17 team is clicking too, so it's tough to even touch anything over there. But yeah, I'm not the pit coach. It'd be hard. The six guys are really good too. So and it doesn't just the guys that you work with that are over the wall. That's a part of it, right? Yeah. The guy's pulling hose, the guy's rolling tires in, the guy's behind the wall. It takes everybody.
But the tear-off guy.
Tear-off guy is important.
He is.
Everybody. That job.
You don't pull it, right? I've done that job.
I did that job on the 14 car the year we won the championship just for a couple races because Troy, the guy that did it, broke his foot or something. And Tony was such a prick. You would, go go out there and give him a water bottle and he'd, grab your fire suit and pull you in the car. Because, it's a thankless job, right? You can only be in the way. So he'd, pull you in the car, kind of hit you in the nuts with the bottle when he threw it out. It was brutal. But, yeah, that's my six-man story. That's what they call that, the sixth man.
Was it still five-man back then?
It was five-man pit stop. Or that was a seventh man. That's what you call it now, six-man now, yeah. Hmm. So I'm happy I'm changing front tires and not doing that.
Progression. Stacking.
I say you're getting popular. I mean, dogs of the week's getting big.
Getting some traction. Stacking pennies is getting big.
People are stopping by the pits. Before pit stops, people are gathering around the 12 pit box. I saw it at Charlotte. People want to get a look at my man.
Yeah.
Be a dog.
Got to be a dog. Can't have no cats meowing. And the fans are all standing around too, waiting in the wings for this Ben Kennedy schedule breakdown interview. We talked to him for over an hour, but we're going to give you guys a short little clip of what we got into with him. And the rest of that's going to drop on Thursday. Check it out.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
gate.
For me, race day is a great reason to shut down the laptop, put the phone on silent, and simply enjoy the driving. But Mobile One wants to remind you that you can get that same kind of escape any day of the week. How? By simply hopping in your car, rolling the windows down, and hitting the road. No emails, no calls, no work, just freedom. Mobile One, for the love of driving. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Stacking Pennies in studio. He has joined us via Zoom before, but first time he has set foot on the Stacking Pennies set. The guy, the brainchild of the NASCAR schedule and many other things, Ben Kennedy, joining us.
Cool.
Golf clap.
Thank Welcome. You for having me. Appreciate
Thanks for coming.
It. Good to finally be here in person.
Absolutely. You're the man of the hour. Everybody wants to talk to you. You have the big awaited schedule. Got pushed back a couple weeks. There was a lot of chatter, a lot of chirp tripping. What's changing? What's moving? We going to Mexico. We going to Canada. Who knows? And we're going to Iowa.
And we're going to Iowa.
How many?
I got my passport updated and everything.
I did too. Yeah, you owe me that $75.
Always have your passport ready. You never know where you're going to go.
We'll get to that in a second. I'm sitting here holding a spreadsheet of the schedule. How tired are you looking at this?
So the morning after we release the schedule, and I do this every year. I mean, as soon as we start working on the schedule, which is 6 months in advance, is when we start to place – you know, dates in boxes. I have my Excel sheet up. I have my Excel sheet up and one or two other documents. And it always feels so good that next morning to hit the red X afterwards. I'm like, I'm not seeing the schedule again. So we went through 24 different variations on the schedule this year. We landed on 24B. So we play with different scenarios too. And that was our last version. So we did a lot better than 2020, which I think we ended up with 85 versions.
Sheesh. Well, we were racing Wednesdays. We were just racing all we can do to get all the races backfilled before Phoenix.
Wednesdays, doubleheaders, all that stuff.
I can't even imagine the amount of phone calls went into that. Man, you guys have worked tirelessly. We can talk about the end and then kind of work backwards. Is there like a moment where somebody is like, yeah, pull a trigger on that? Or like, is there a panel? Like, thumbs up, we good? Looking around, everybody? Any reservations? Okay, good. And then, like, you hit the big red button and go, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's I would say the red button never really gets hit until we officially send the schedule out every year. So, you know, and I was talking with some people that were hearing about some of the rumors around the 24 schedule leading into it. And, right, like, we're going through different variations. We're playing out different scenarios. And we have a group of, I would say, about, give or take, one or two people, a dozen people that get together on a weekly basis that are talking through the schedule. So we have folks represented from competition, from broadcast, from international, from strategy, a handful of different folks that will get together and talk about everything related to the schedule. So, you know, broadcast will weigh in as it relates to network windows and start times. Competition will weigh in, you know, as you think about moving from track to track. So this is something that we think about a lot. And something that someone asked me last week is, well, why would you not have a midweek race in between these two dates? And in order to have a midweek race, it's really tough to come to Sonoma to, even if it is a Martinsville or Richmond on a Wednesday, especially if you start to consider weather and all of those things. So competition will weigh in. We'll have our international folks weigh in. We'll have our strategy folks weigh in. So we really kind of have a core group that starts to set the foundation for the schedule. And then from there, we'll have different parties that will break out that are focused on the execution of it. So you had Julie Giese here that talked about the Chicago Street Course, put together a team in Chicago that's now executing that event. The team in Los Angeles is focused on the Coliseum. So what started as a small group of 7 or 8 people in the summer of 2019 has now expanded into a handful of different folks. Not perfect yet, but we're learning a lot and going to continue to iterate on it as we keep going.
Do you ever look at a farmer's almanac?
Occasionally, yeah.
Do you?
We do. Yeah, we look at that every now and then. I mean, you start to think about weather. It's a big factor in our schedule, right? Different times of year, when we're racing, where we're racing, all of those things.
Can we not go back to Texas when it's 400 degrees?
Well, it's moving to the spring next
year. My man, appreciate
that. It is moving to the spring
next
year.
You got your wish.
Yep. Yes.
We got your wish.
Yes.
So we actually, we've partnered up with the weather company in the past and IBM. So they have all sorts of data that we can look at as we start to think about weather, forecast, time of year. I think the tricky part of this, right, is especially you start to think about February and March and then October and November. There's only a handful of warm weather tracks that we can realistically go to. It's Daytona, it's Homestead, it's Phoenix. Even Vegas is a bit of a mixed bag every now and then. Atlanta can be a mixed bag. So you start to think about February, March, it is difficult to find a lot of warm weather dates, especially when we get to that part of the schedule.
But speaking of Atlanta, Ben, that second race, did Atlanta, what puzzle piece? Was that last? Was it first? Like, because I feel like the second race you could argue is maybe one of the most important because you have such a massive audience for the 500. And how do you carry them over? I'm guessing you want to give fans the greatest product that you put on. Do you do something vastly different? Seems like we're doing something kind of similar in a super speedway kind of intermediate hybrid. Talk to me about Atlanta and how you kind of chose that as the second race.
Yeah, so Atlanta, we discussed for a long time. There were half a dozen tracks that we talked about being in that second slot. And to your point, it's a really important part on the schedule. So you go from the Clash to Daytona 500, highest rated, highest viewed, most attended event of the year to Atlanta. You have a lot of people that are just naturally carrying over into the first part of the season. So felt like it was important to have a racetrack that frankly puts on an exciting race, a compelling racing product. Now that we've been able to see it out with the reconfiguration and repave for the past couple of years, that was a consideration. Weather was another consideration. Sure, a little bit colder in late February, but we've also had Atlanta in the second slot for about 5 or 6 years, you know, from 2015, I think, through 2019. So there were a handful of things that we talked about. You know, part of that also, you know, continuing to have Vegas and Phoenix in the third and fourth slots, a lot of date equity around those two races in particular. So there were a handful of things as we talked about Atlanta. And, you know, I'll be honest, we looked at a ton of different options going into that second slot. And just naturally, Atlanta made the most sense, all things considered.
It's one of his best tracks, so I'm sure you're happy about it. Lock you into the playoffs early.
I would love that. I would love that. And then it's in the first round of the playoffs, too, so we might mess around and be able to go on to the round of 12. Who knows? A lot of chatter. I personally like Daytona being the last regular season race of the year. I feel like it gave the sport a lot of unknowns, a little bit of a wild card to finish the season. How much talk went into that decision making Darlington the regular season finale?
A lot of talk. So we debated that for a really long time because, you know, we did make a pretty bold move a few years ago and moved it off of the July 4th weekend, right? Talk about date equity. Daytona on July 4th, in a lot of ways, was synonymous with each other. So moving it to the end of the regular season was a huge shift for us. And, you know, I think after we've seen that shift play out for a few years, it's something we debated for a really long time. We have the two Olympic off weeks. Do you do midweek race? Do you do a doubleheader? Or do you shift the tail end of your season back 1 week, which we ended up deciding to do? And, you know, as we said last week and when we announced the schedule, this isn't a forever thing. This is something we're going to test out for 1 year, see how it goes, continue to learn. Candidly, I wouldn't be surprised if Daytona went back to the regular season cutoff, especially after the past few years. It's exciting. It's unpredictable. Anytime you have a lot of those values that come out of a race, our fans tend to enjoy it. In the last race of the regular season, I mean, anyone can win that race and punch their ticket to the playoffs. So that's really exciting. That said, I am looking forward to seeing what Darlington's going to look like on Labor Day weekend. You know, that's something we talked about too. Do you swap Darlington and Daytona and have Daytona on Labor Day weekend? Feel like there's a lot of value and a lot of history and tradition of Darlington and that 500-mile race on that weekend. So that was another part of us talking about it. So again, just because it's part of the 24 schedule doesn't mean it's going to be on the 25 schedule, but it is something we wanted to test out and see how it does.
Everything's
up to change. Yeah.
He's had a talking point whenever we bring up scheduled talk. He says there's only 4 tracks on the schedule. How many numbers?
I would like, so I had this conversation with Chip Weil, who's president of tracks, right?
And right.
At kickball, which we lost this week, sticking point, but we'll get over that. I asked him, I said, man, I've always kind of been on the fence of 2 Daytonas, 2 Talladegas, 2 Martinsvilles. And like, I'd be good going everywhere else once just from a guy on pit road's standpoint of crowd and kind of the vibe you get when you go to a new track or only go somewhere once.
You like two Daytonas and two
Daytonas, two Talladegas, and two Martinsvilles. Everywhere else I can do single ones.
Okay.
He said, well, where the hell do you want to go? And that's a great point, right? So I was like, yeah, that's a good point. Like
Kentucky.
Like, and he had rebuttals for Kentucky. But then I was wondering, like, there's not a lot of places you can go in the country because there's just so many. Like, we've come so far with safety since, like, I brought up, like, a Pikes Peak. Like, is Pikes Peak even still there? How many different tracks? Now we've crossed the bridge where you can create tracks, right, in the city, like Chicago. How many do you keep your finger on the pulse of, like, what short tracks would we be able to go to? What has the capacity seating-wise? Like, what do you look at around the country there?
Yeah, so there's a number of things we try to look at. And in a perfect world, if we could go and race at any racetrack that exists out there tomorrow, you know, we would have already made a lot of those changes. So you hit on some of them. You know, we look at capacity, we look at fan experience, we look at amenities, and then a really big important part of it is what does track safety look like? So, you know, do we have safer walls? Is the foam updated in the safer walls? Do we have the right guardrails and fencing? And that's not a small capital expense as you think about moving our Cup Series to different tracks. So, you know, a lot of times as we think about looking at these new venues, frankly, they're tracks that we've either raced at in the past. That might be a track that Formula One races at, like Circuit of the Americas, or we go down this path that we've done in Los Angeles and Chicago of creating temporary tracks. Now, we've been very candid, and I believe this, that, you know, if we're going to have a stadium race and a street circuit type of racing on the schedule, it's never going to be a majority of the schedule. It's probably never going to be a bulk of the schedule, but is there a place where you could have one or two or maybe three of those types of tracks where you're going into new and novel markets in a downtown location, literally bringing NASCAR racing to not only our fans, but a lot of people that haven't been to a NASCAR race before? Yeah. I think that's an opportunity to talk about the temporary tracks. From a permanent standpoint, I do think it is a bit tricky because, you know, are there tracks that we could go out there? Absolutely. You know, we got to think about the location. We have to think about the market. And then really importantly, we have to make sure it's safe. And then anyone that's coming to the track, that they have a good fan experience. And you think about the level of amenities that people expected 20 years ago, looks entirely different today, right? Now you want to come to the track, you want to be able to connect to your Wi-Fi, you want to be able to park close to the track. So just the overall fan experience has evolved as we think about that.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Just a snippet of the good stuff you're going to get from Ben Kennedy. Over an hour on schedule, his role, future NASCAR, so much good stuff. His days as a driver, you can listen to it all. Stacking Pennies with Ben Kennedy is going to drop on Thursday, wrapping this week's episode. Guys, ready? Corey, penny for your thoughts.
If you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
Oh, that's right.
Case Bob 482. Does the interior color of your car, white or black, make a difference with your aspect while driving? And does the pink window net play into that too?
So everybody's interior color is black, or I'm sorry, white. Like the chassis is white. Some guys cover up their surfaces with black vinyl, or something that we worked on last year is even when you do like a matte finish carbon dashboard, whatever difference with this car is in particular, I think the windshield has more slant in it, like laid down. So it reflects real bad of carbon on the inside of the windshield. So we experimented with different types of materials and we ended up with, like, they call it like flocking. Like they literally just put like Elmer's glue on the dash and like spray this black fluff on it, and it's great. So that helps visibility when there's a super glare on your windshield. That's helped. And then you see some guys put clear tubes through their windshield ducts, or just leave windshield bolts out so you can see through the direction you're going. So there's a lot of different ways you can see.
You can leave windshield bolts out?
You can. They don't like it, but you can leave them out.
It turns out.
Not the fasteners.
Also, the pink window net is black on the inside. So they do pink on the – I know it's a great cause. I think they look terrible. Go buy one. You can buy one of my signature on it, I think, at kurtbusch.com. I don't know where you can buy it, but it's for a great cause. They look terrible, but they sew black to the inside of it.
Smart.
But you could also see every pink square. So as that thing's whipping in the breeze, you get like pink square in your peripheral.
Mm.
Psychs you out a little bit. You just have to lock in.
Glad the window net came down quickly, but Ricky Stenhouse took a little while to get out. A little worried about my man.
I mean, he was catching on fire for like 20 minutes.
Came out like a cool customer too. Like, we're good.
He's a cool customer.
Dude, that red chassis on the 3 car back in the day is coolest of all time.
Dude, when they did all of Kurt Busch's monster releases for the 45, they had a red chassis car, like for all the show cars and stuff. And I'm like, oh my goodness, imagine how sweet it would be if Flow Coating could put a sweet color on these chassis. It wouldn't stick for very long, but
I mean,
it'd look cool
there.
For a little.
500 miles, all got that's all, that's all it takes. Unless you go to Charlotte once, 600. Everything else.
So there you go.
Okay. Next question comes from Tyler C. Turner. If you could play kickball with one team at one stadium for the rest of your life, who's on your team roster and what stadium would it be?
Oh, my God. That's a great stacking pennies. Penny for your thoughts question, Tyler Turner. You're the GOAT. I'm going to go dead or alive, full course, all-star kickball team. I'm going to go Pele.
Wow, Pele.
Aaron Judge. Jesus Christ. I don't know. I watched Chosen last night, and he played a game, and he wasn't very coordinated at it. So he'll probably be, like, for moral support, he'll be a third base coach.
Jesus would be?
Jesus would be.
Okay.
Yeah, because I wouldn't want him to hurt. I just want him to give me a pep, like a pep talk, make me feel good about myself.
Spit a verse at you.
Yep.
Right.
Give me some help here. Who's another dog?
I don't know where you go after
Tebow.
Jesus.
Oh, Tim
Tebow.
Yeah. Tebow.
Yeah.
Tebow.
Jesus 1.0, 2.0. Who's in Cristiano Ronaldo?
It's a good one.
Say his name. I don't think he'd be very good in the field. I feel he'd be a liability.
I was trying to talk Brian from Celsius into getting us Messi next year because they just started sponsoring that Miami team. But
Lionel Messi would be a pretty good pickup.
And Cliff Daniels.
Yep.
Why Cliff?
To galvanize the group.
Oh,
kickball.
Right.
He's a kickball champ.
As your leader.
I saw him today, actually, at the
simulator. Fearless leader.
What did he say? Hello, Cord.
No, he said, what are you doing here?
Did he?
I'm like, I came here for the coffee, man. You guys are the nicest Keurig in town. What do you think I'm here for? They're doing the 300 ring fittings because they're getting all their employees 300 win rings. And I was like, yeah, I'm here for the ring, dude. I'd race the race. I get one of those rings. Kidding me? They looked at me. I'm like, I'm not getting a ring. Now, if they win an owner's championship with a 9 car, come on, give me one of them rings.
Hell yeah.
And a little bonus, a little something.
I don't think so. I think that was a one-time fee thing coming.
and where would I play? What stadium, yeah. You don't have to
leave home. Fenway's pretty cool.
You can stay in Kannapolis.
Have you been in Kannapolis?
Yeah. I mean,
dude,
come on.
The Atrium Health Ballpark in downtown Kannapolis is pretty good. I mean, it feels like home now.
Yeah.
Easy ride home, too.
Easy ride home.
We were on the big field this year.
Yeah. It was cup for sure. It was cup. Next question.
Sean K. Morse wants to know, why were the Roval tires labeled left front, right rear, and right front, left rear? I know there's no stagger, but why couldn't any tire be used in any position?
Great observation and question. So from what I understand, they're all four the same, but spring rates are different. So Goodyear gives you a spring rate of the tire, certain compression. So every tire probably varies, 30 pounds maybe in spring rate, but also it has to do with how much air pressure is in it. So when the tire guy scans all the tires, it'll tell you what the spring rates of the tires are. And then some crew chiefs prefer maybe stiffer right side spring rates, stiffer front spring rates, softer rear spring rates. But you're talking 4, 5, 8 pounds. So that's why I think that they're labeled that, unless I'm wrong.
When I was a tire guy, I would always get super confused at road courses because you like normally you write down like 20, say just for purposes, like 20 and 10. And that means like 20 on the rights, 10 on the lefts for ovals if you're running them square. But at a road course, it's like 20 in the fronts, 10 in the rears. So I always get like, damn it, did I get that right? Like I'd always confuse it in my head. But yeah, it's all four tires are the same. Yes.
Yep.
Good questions.
Yes.
Penny, for your thoughts, keep them coming. You can, a couple of these, they were tweeted to us. Just use the hashtag Penny for your thoughts and we'll get them on the show.
Would love to answer your questions. Would also love to give out the Penny Stagger of the Week. I told y'all that it would come from the Kickball Classic. So there was people filing in 5 o'clock. They were coming in droves. Like I said, we sold 1,200 tickets, a little bit over that. And there was a lot of fans with a lot of merch and a lot of different car parts. Some guy, I don't know his name, he asked me like before the semifinals game with a celebrity, call it like 6 o'clock. Hey man, I've got a nose of yours from somewhere. Could you sign it? I'm like, yeah, man, where are you at? I'm over here. I said, so walk out of the door, like walk when you go out, grab it, the door right behind the batting cages, I'll meet you out there. There's, you know, family, this and that. I go get a plate of food because I hadn't eaten all day, get caught up talking to this guy. Yeah. Next thing I know, I'm playing, forgot all about it.
Oh, Corey.
3 hours go by. Ugh. We end up winning the championship. Go Team Celsius. We got the gold. Let's go. I am down. I'm sitting there on the field signing autographs, watching fireworks with the kiddos. And there's the stadium's clearing out. And a buddy of mine, Brandon, that cooked the barbecue for everybody was like, there's some old guy that's been outside for 3 hours with a nose.
Oh, man.
And I was like, oh, so I go outside. There's three or four of them hanging out there. And he had a nose off the built car from last year. And I felt terrible. I signed his nose. We had sweet Arctic coolers with Kickball Classic on them that we gave to all the celebrities who played, bunch of stuff inside of them. I used that as a seat to sit down and sign the bumper. And I got home and just hadn't thought about it on Monday or like Friday or Saturday, Sunday. I opened my trunk on Monday to like unload the cooler that I was excited to go like load up with some stuff. And I left it there. So for his, I hope he grabbed it.
For his 3 hour
wait. For his 3 hours of waiting, left my cooler full of a bunch of cool stuff. So I hope that he was like, you know what, this sucker made me wait out here for 3 hours. I'm taking his cooler.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that's the case. But nonetheless, I got this sweet old Stack and Penny's cooler we use as a table. Nonetheless.
Love it.
Yeah, this is like a 200 gallon.
It is a monster.
It's a beast.
My Penny Stack of the Week is Jinya Ramen Bar for bringing us food this morning.
Oh, dude, they had the spread. They had pork belly taco things.
The wings were really good.
They were surprisingly good.
The ramen was amazing.
And I was wondering what the treat was. And then they gave me this talking point because they are doing a big event with Kyle Larson of all people.
Yeah.
So Jinya Ramen Bar is hosting an exciting event. It's a meet and greet with Kyle Larson ahead of the South Point 400. It's going to be in the Jinya Ramen Bar in Las Vegas at the Rainbow locations. I'm not sure exactly where that is. I got the address right here. But if you're going to be in Vegas, go see Kyle Larson. And even if you don't really like Kyle Larson, go get the chicken wings.
Yeah,
the chicken wings.
Oh, he's going to be at their store.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's going to be signing autographs.
Big ramen guy.
Oh, okay, gotcha. What's the address?
The address for those who want to go. 7240 South Rainbow Boulevard, Suite A.
Okay.
Somehow William Byron's still 24 in there. Still stealing the spotlight.
It's always right in there.
And if you want to put it in your maps, it's pronounced kind of funky. So the spelling is what?
J-I-N-Y-A.
J-I-N-Y-A.
Jinya.
Jinya Ramen Bar.
I'm telling you.
Good
and
eats.
I don't gas up food very often because I'm a stickler, but that was some freaking...
You made a big old plate.
I went back for triples.
Scarfed it.
You know what the good news is for us?
What?
60 locations nationwide.
So if you can
get it all around.
You can go anywhere. There's two in Charlotte. You can get that stuff anywhere.
Ramen dogs.
Dogs eat ramen. Dogs eat Jinya. Go get yours. And we appreciate y'all for tuning in each and every week to Stacking Pennies. Also, don't forget Spare Change drops race day morning. For the South Point 400 at Vegas. on NBC, guys. A round of eight, first round of that, kicking it off this Sunday. Don't miss it. Also, make sure you guys continue to like, rate, share, rate, review, all the things. And as always, keep stacking pennies. We appreciate y'all. We are presented by Mobile One. Have a good week. Bye.